Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket. Welcome to episode 4 of the Down at Third Man podcast. Yes, we have nearly reached the same as my batting average, and we haven't yet had any complaints. We haven't had any knocks on the door. We're still going strong. We've still got all three of us coming back, which I think is as much a miracle as anything. Not many were betting on Lalo lasting past episode 3. So tonight, as always, we'd just like to say a quick thank you to Woodstock Cricket for supporting us. If you might have seen, we've got a giveaway going with them, so we'll talk a little bit about that later on. We've also this week got our hands on a few beers from the Big Smoke Brewing Company after it was suggested to us by the lads on the Slogging It pod. Very nice little tipple they are. And to be honest, we are looking for someone if they'd like to get involved and like to send us a few beers each week. We're not going to say no to that. Right, coming up today, we have got the first test of the India versus England game to talk about, which I'm sure we'll have spent lots of time on, and there'll be a very gleeful Lalo and possibly Jono as well. We've then got an interview with Pat Brown that we recorded on Sunday, and then we'll finish off as usual with our club cricket and our room 101. So, best introduce the other two that make the magic happen. Jono, how are we?
Oh, wow. Magical, mate. That's where I am.
The magic happen.
The magic. Lalo, how are you as you swig your beer down?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Now I've got a beer in my hand.
Yeah, I must admit this is my first beer since New Year's Eve as well. I did manage dry January somehow.
Mine in about 2 days, probably. If that.
I'm surprised it's 2 days, to be fair. I thought you were going to say 2 hours.
I'm surprised you know what day it is.
Yeah, it's all right for the feel.
I've struggled life, this week, to be fair.
Oh, God. Us hard workers, us key workers, and then this dude sat on his bed all day.
It's hard work, mate. I'm Warzone.
No, he's key, exactly. He's key, mate. I know that much.
Yeah, we won't talk any more about that. Right then, boys, we'll get first of all onto our cricket news. So, first thing got down, because we'll start at the beginning of the week, was, of course, the Big Bash League. That came to an end. The Sixers won, who were probably the best team throughout, to be fair to them. James Vince was the key man, got 95. So, yet again, jibbed his 100, so he didn't have to get the jugs in. But, good 95. Good to see AJ Tye getting booed when he came out to bat, which was lovely. I listened to an interview with Steve O'Keefe the other day, who plays for the Sixers. He was referring to AJ Tye as just AJ Wide. That was all he would refer to him as, which was quite amusing. And to be fair, this sounds like they had a good party. If you want a laugh, you need to listen to the great cricketer and listen to their interview with Steve O'Keefe, because I'm pretty sure he's still heavily under the influence, and it's like a day and a half after the final. And he was talking about getting phone calls at like 6 a.m. Asking him to come down to like Sydney Harbour Bridge and bring Carlos Brathwaite's whiskey with him, because the boys had got black coffees, but they wanted whiskey in the coffee at like 6, 7 a.m. in the morning. So sounds like they had a good night.
It's wrong.
Well, you haven't actually stayed in their own bed or something, have they, for like majority of the tournament or something?
They've been all over the shop.
Yeah, that Enriquez got asked in the interview after the game. He was like, oh, yeah, but you can't wait getting your own bed. And he was like, I can't, but that's not on the list of priorities at the minute. I'm going to get absolutely leathered.
It's exactly what you want. If you can win a major franchise league and you're not out on the lash for at least 24 hours, I'd be massively disappointed. But one of the best bits...
I think everyone over here would just do anything just to be on the lash.
Well, yeah, true. One of the best bits as well is they were commenting that obviously they went on the lash for about 24 hours or something daft, or went on the lash all night, and then a few of them had to turn up for grade cricket the next day, and if one of the lads managed a 90 odd, Jack Edwards, even though they reckon he must have been absolutely slaughtered, and another lad managed like a 3 or 4 for off in a 2020. So fair play to him, got some stamina, I think we'll give him.
Play the best cricket, mate, messed up.
Well, yeah, the Mitch Edwards. Right.
That's incredible, the cricketing badger that is. Mitchell Edwards has had 2 shout-outs in 2 weeks.
He's doing great.
And I bet he's not listened to either.
Yeah. I can't imagine him being particularly good with his tech, his technology, I'll be honest.
Yeah, builds things, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Not there's anything against building things, but he is a builder in every sense of the word.
Exactly. And he's under the patio, mate.
Oh, dear. Right, on that note, we'll move on to the next bit of news, which was before England pulled off a fantastic win, the Windies pulled off possibly one of the best fourth innings wins we've seen in a long, long time, and that, I think you could say, even including, obviously, Pant not long ago in Brisbane, Stokes at Headingley, it's possibly on a par, maybe even better than that. I mean, Kyle Myers' average, first-class average of 28, previously a bowling all-rounder who's changed himself round now to be a batting all-rounder, debut, goes out and it's 210 all-out. I mean, I don't quite know how to explain it.
It's beyond explanation, mate. That's why you can't explain it. don't think it will happen again.
What were they chasing? Like 380, 390 or something like
that? Something like 395 or something like that. That Nick Bonner? Bonner on his debut, he also hit quite a few. He's hit quite a few again today, I think, as well, and for him, to be fair.
You've seen that LBW, by the way, that LBW decision.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, damn.
It's the one that literally just hits the middle of the bat.
Yeah. An interesting decision, but I think some of the timing has been dreadful.
Bangladeshi, mate.
Not sure, but yeah, there's been some. Talking of umpiring, I don't know if anyone will have seen it, but Pakistan today have played South Africa in a T20. Decent game. Mohammed Rizwan hitting a ton. A week after he hit, I don't think it's even quite a week after hitting a ton in a test match. Yeah, he's. But in the game, I think it was South Africa had one given out, stumped. And I don't quite know how he's given it out, stumped, because the foot is clearly on the ground behind the line. He went to the third umpire, he's looked at it and just gone, yeah, it's out. Like, looked at it for literally a couple of times, if that. And just went, yeah, that's out. And I could tell you now it definitely wasn't out. His foot was down over the line. But it was like he was too busy looking at his bat.
On your way, mate. Stuff.
Get the game over and done.
Get the game done.
Gate done. Done and out of the way. But yeah, great victory for the Windies, because let's be honest, the Bangladesh aren't slouches at home. They've beaten England, they've beaten Australia. So for the Windies, with what was literally a second 11, because I think they had four regulars plus Rakeem Cornwall playing for them.
Big Rakeem.
Rakeem the Dream.
Rakeem the Dream, who was involved in running the single to win.
The club cricketer, and he's like, well, it was only ever going to be a single, mate, wasn't it? Where did he get that to? The boundary.
Long gone.
Long gone. Oh, God. Yeah. He is the second team slogger in all of us, isn't he? How can you not be a fan of Rakeem the Dream?
Gotta love him. So, yeah, so big Rakeem was involved in that. It was a really good win. And to be fair, it'll be interesting to see how it goes in the second test, whether they'll keep on that high and they'll somehow manage to win a second one. I can't see it. I think Bangladesh will be big. They were on about 250 odd for five, yeah, so reasonable start, but nothing outstanding.
Is Shakib injured?
Yeah, out injured. Shakib Al-Hassan. Doesn't stop him going into the old IPL though, wanting big money next week.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I've got down really for cricketing news, because we'll save the IPL for chat about next week when the actual auction's happened, is about, obviously, the free-to-air TV. It was back on Channel 4. Double the number of watchers, it seems, viewers, it seems, compared to Sky. After starting only slightly better than Sky, it went up to basically about double what Sky would normally get. So that was good, I thought. And to be fair, I thought the coverage was quite good. Bit of a weird studio, and I think it's a good thing they've decided to recruit a third person to be in the studio.
It wasn't weird, mate. It was just awkward. Anytime you're sitting on TV, like, whether you pay your TV license, you get it, or you watch it on Channel 4OD, you pay your Sky subscription, I don't know, but each their own. But oh my God, if you're watching television and there's sections of awkward pause when someone's asked for someone's views, it's not worth the money you're paying for it, I tell you that. He's just got Alistair Coote being asked a question. He's just like, And then just seconds of silence. You're like, oh, God.
Yeah, it was good for it to be back, and I think they did a reasonable job on it, saying they'd had like 2 days' notice. But I think the third person is key, because it just came across as like a weird, awkward counselling session about cricket.
Is Strauss on this week?
I believe it's Strauss with their new signing that is Ebony Rainford Brent.
That was funny as well. After the game, Strauss was on, and he was on about the bowling, I think, and then he couldn't remember Bess and Leach's name. So for about 10 seconds, he was going, I've got a bit of a mind blank here.
Great stuff. But based on that, and I know this has upset Jono as much as it's upset me, the BCCI, everyone's favourite people, not...
The worst people in the world.
The ones who...
Not because they're Indian, though, obviously, because that would be racist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just after the Australians.
All Indian listeners are obviously friends of the pod.
We do love our Indian listeners. However, what we don't love is the BCCI running cricket and doing what's best for India and India only, and for their own back pockets only.
They have been, haven't they?
Yeah. They've refused to sell the rights to social media clips to Channel 4 or to anyone else. And I wouldn't mind, to be fair, if they were tweeting the clips themselves, because that'd be fine. But they can't even be asked to tweet the clips themselves, which means that... And the clips that we're put on, a few people like managed to clip it up and get some clips on, of like Jimmy Anderson's great delivery to Shubman Gill, they managed... They then had them took down within 24 hours, which was just shite, really, because let's be honest, if you're going to get kids into cricket, it's because they're on Twitter looking at clips as much as it is because it's on Channel 4.
The clips, the one thing I will say that I don't mean to defend them because I'm going to criticise them in a second, but the clips that the BCCI have got online, the ones that they actually put on, are actually really good. Like, they've got, essentially, you can follow the highlights of the day, and they load really quick, the good quality, got all the commentary and everything on, they're pretty good. I think I sent you a link to one, turn it into on the BCCI website. Once you go through the Twitter, it's...
Yeah.
Find what you want, but, like, even the YouTube highlights, you watch the full day's highlights back, and you're watching it in the, like, 20 for none. Next thing I notice, I'm watching the fourth innings highlights, and the bloody... like 50 odd for three, and they haven't shown any wickets. I'm like, well, what's the point? They're like, no point whatsoever. But like I say, 90% of people watch the majority, especially playing in India when a lot of people aren't going to be up or whatever. They're going to watch all of their highlights on Facebook. They're going to watch it on Twitter. They're going to find it through YouTube. They're going to find it somewhere online, aren't they?
They're not going to go on the BCCI website, are they? Unless they're badges like us.
Yeah, they're not going to be on
the ones on. Is it A4 they're on or something? They're like 24.
That is one thing I'll give Channel 4 a big what's it for. They are now going to be showing on More4, just because you can't just have like normal channel names. More4 are going to be showing the highlights at dinner time, and then it's about midnight each day. So
how long are they on?
At least on TV. Yeah. I don't think it said how long for. It just gave the times.
Because on Sky, they have them for like 2 hours, didn't they? Of like a whole day. Whereas I watched a bit of the highlights and it was literally 20 minutes. So you're like, oh.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be getting more than half out.
I got a sneaky suspicion though from like what they were saying, that it was almost like, because all of the deals for the all of the highlights and the coverage was so kind of like last minute, it's almost like they hadn't got time to prep anything properly, which. It's crap, but you just hope they get it sorted out, don't you?
Yeah, it's crap because they allowed it to go that late. I think that's the annoying thing, but at least it's on TV. At least we can watch it, because at one point it was talk of you're going to have to sign up to Hotstar on your phone, or you're going to have Disney and fight with your missus that you wanted to watch the cricket over than watching Cinderella or some bollocks. So be it. I don't think... It was ended up all right, but I can't pretend it was great in that sense. That did disappoint me, but so be it. It's one of them things. I think it's time we got on to what we're all here for, and what I'm sure we're all ready to gloat about and then probably regret in a few days' time. First test, India versus England in Chennai, and a miracle happened. It was possibly the perfect England performance, more or less. and we won comfortably, 227 runs. Joe Root has become the first on his 100th test, got a double century, which also meant that he's the first player, I believe, in test matches to outscore the opposition team in three games in a row. As in, he scored more in one innings than they did in one of their innings, all 10 wickets.
What
which
a
I think
stat.
Takes some doing. That is. That is
wow! Where have you plucked that from?
I'll be honest, I think I stole it off someone who I've seen tweet it. So can't pretend that I came up with it. But yeah, he's obviously got 200 in the first game against Sri Lanka. They were all out for 135. He got 180-odd in the second Sri Lanka game. They were out for about 150. And then he got 218. And I think India were out for about 190 really in the last innings, was it? Or something like that. So fair play to Root. I think everyone will give him... say he was the main man of the match, but there were some good performances elsewhere. Best 4 wickets first innings, Leach 4 wickets second innings. Jimmy
That's
Anderson bowled the best over. And I know that Aid's now going to be desperate to say he's best in Leach stats, so we'll let him
best
go with
Leach,
it.
Mate, same figure, same overs. That's what you got
Can
me.
Can you remember what they were, though?
That's just creeped you out, though, more than anything. 3
off 26, I'm going for.
4 for 76 off something like that. 20-odd overs. I can't remember exactly how
Another many stat, India at home. You know when we beat them in 2012, was it?
Yeah.
Since then, they've lost one game at home. Not a series, one game.
One game against Australia.
And they lost. Australia lost 3-1 anyway in that series, didn't they?
Yeah,
but they did right royally. Rockham. They lost by about 370, didn't they, or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Steve O'Keefe got 6 for your mate.
Sock. What a man Sock is. If he isn't out getting hammered after winning the Big Bash, he's taking 6 wickets for now to fucking India. Fair play. So, any thoughts on the game before we get on to the two main men? Anything you noticed along the game? I think you know who the two main men are going to be fair.
Not Rory Burns, mate.
Well, yeah, I'm guessing you mentioned maybe player ratings. But yeah, I thought it was... Do you agree that it was a perfect performance, or at least a near-perfect performance?
Well, I want to know what more you'd want out of a bloody away performance if you were bloody asking for one.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. I think I was listening to Tuffers and Vaughan, and I think Vaughan was saying it's got to be a 10 out of 10 performance of the team. And I think Tufnell and Ebony all both said, oh, no, it's like a 9.5. It wasn't quite perfect. And Michael Vaughan was like, well, you've won by over 200 runs in. Do you want more? Do you want? We've dominated 5 days. I'm with him, to be fair. It's not often I'm with Vaughan, but I'm with Michael Vaughan on that one. I thought it was more or less spot on, to be fair.
To be playing away in India, how can you get any better than that?
I'm with you. I don't
pass.
Oh, we should have declared earlier.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We'll mention that in a minute about Root. So we'll go on to Joe Root. I mean, the bloke is a freak. I mean, he hit 218 and looked comfortable more or less the whole time until he got a ball that sort of stayed low, didn't it, I think, from memory. It wasn't like he'd... He got out doing out stupid or anything. He looked comfortable. He brought up his double century with a 6. Didn't even realise that he'd made his double ton. Ollie Pope had to tell him. He thought he'd just hit a really nice 6 off Ashwin. He thought he still needed a couple more. And Ollie Pope apparently had to tell him because Ollie Pope found it hilarious. But and then he came out second innings and just knocked 40 off 32 balls. Like he was batting on an absolute road and it was a piece of.
I think that that second innings was the bit that kind of got everyone, because that second innings he did generally look like he was just taking the mick.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way.
I don't think anyone... he did generally look like he was batting on a totally different wicket and doing something berserk that no one else was.
Just a better player than Coley, isn't he, to be honest?
Well, he is officially, mate. He is now officially, yeah. Don't forget, a better player than Coley. In India.
Root over Kohli, Anderson over Kapil Dev, mate.
And Kapil Dev, Kohli, line them all up. Better than them all.
Well, he is above him in the rankings. Kohli's down now to 5. Ooh. Not even in the Fab 4. Although I guess technically that puts Marnus in it, which I'm unsure on. Marnus is a bit weird. Not that there's anything wrong with being weird, like, but you know.
But you are weird.
Yeah, no offence, Marnus. I'm sure you're listening right now, lad.
But... Strange lad.
Yeah. But Root, absolutely exceptional. Took that absolute whirly of a catch with his weaker hand as well. Fair play to him.
Which catch do you reckon was better, Stokes or Root?
I'm going to say Root. I'm going to go Root because it was off the face of the bat and it was absolutely hammered.
He got mullered at him.
Because they did like awards after the game, didn't they? And was it like moment of the match and Stokes got it for his catch? And I was like...
Moment of the match?
Well, there was a lot of awards.
I noticed there was a weird award going out, like a Dream 11. Game changer of the match, I think it was.
What was the prize? Because I couldn't work it out. I could have sworn it said a large rupee. And I've Googled it, and I still don't know what a large rupee is.
Not a clue. I hate to say, I haven't got a clue about that one.
It was like three or four awards, wasn't there, or something like that?
There was a lot of awards going on.
I think, did Anderson get a game changer? For that,
I don't know.
Stokes got one.
The interesting thing was, obviously, Joe Root didn't get a signed shirt for his 100th test. It's like it was all shithousery from the Indians when they gave Nathan Lyon one.
Are you annoyed about that? Because it's shithousery to the Australians, so it's funny.
No, I'm not annoyed. It just made me laugh.
I'm actually incredibly torn. I genuinely don't know what to make of it because I'm so happy in one sense that they've mugged off the Australians, but touch disappointed it wasn't us.
What if they give it at the end of the series?
I'll accept then that that's just good sport.
Yeah,
maybe. So... the only downside people are saying about Root, although I'm going to be honest here, I don't agree with it, is they were slating him for not declaring. Now, just as an off point about declaring, it turns out, having listened to Jimmy Anderson earlier, it turns out they were actually going to declare that last over. He'd sent a message to Joffa and Leach to basically tee off, and then Joffa got out, and because they were already losing the over anyway, if they declared, they decided to send Jimmy out and said, go on, just go and have a bit of fun. And interestingly, Jimmy says when he went out there, Coley was like, come on, we've brought mid on up. Come on, hit it over the top for me. And Jimmy says he just turned and went, Luke, I ain't got that in my locker. And then decided to pull out the reverse sweep first ball.
It's just a stock shot first ball.
I'd
love to hear him go on the Tail Enders podcast, you know, and just for like Greg James, just to ask him, so what was like going through your mind then when you just walked out there first ball and just whacked a reverse sweep out?
He basically said that he wanted that. He decided that was what he was going to go with because he needed to score runs.
The Burnley Laura.
I just love to know what kind of like possesses you. Or what your thought process is when you think a reverse sweep in India is going to be your best scoring option when you're nine down on a fourth day.
Yeah.
Just getting whacked the old, get the reverse sweep out.
Well, Archer said something today, was it? I think it was. On about the pitch, saying it's like the worst pitch he's ever seen for like a day five pitch. So that's probably one of the reasons. I reckon one of the other reasons was just giving the bowlers a bit of a rest.
Yeah, that would seem to be what they've sort of said, that They wanted at least 400. They would like to have got to 420 because they knew that was the record and that just sort of, if it did all go wrong, but they wanted to be in a position basically where they couldn't lose because it's first game in the series. And if they, say, gave them 350 chase and they chased it and they lost, that'd be the end of the series there and then sort of thing. So, and to be fair, I agreed that maybe you'd have done it an over or two earlier if you really wanted, but I don't think it was ever going to make masses of difference as long as we had at least 10 overs that night. But what I found odd was like Shane Warne and Michael Vaughan, they may as well have just said, Luke, we don't want to wake up tomorrow morning for do the commentary. It was like they thought England should basically declare on with a 300 lead and try to bowl them out before the day was over.
At the risk of sounding like boring or like I'm repeating myself, mate, but what country does Shane Warne come from?
Well, exactly, I know. But Michael Vaughan, but then we all know that Michael Vaughan has seems to have opinions purely for the point of trying to get people to notice him, I would say.
Clickbait, mate.
Yeah, clickbait of
opinion. Don't get me wrong, though, because to like to an extent, I think we all said at the time, didn't we? I don't understand why Don Best went out there and just blocked Al out of it for
40... Average, mate, Red Inca.
But he blocked Al out of it for about 40 minutes, and then next thing you know, was... got a bit adventurous out of nowhere. So you'd have thought that, like, maybe he'd at least, like, done one from the start and carried it on, or if you're going to have a slog from the start, don't pad up for it nearly an hour, and then just all of a sudden go ballistic. It just seemed a bit weird. I don't know whether there might have been, I thought there might have been a bit more to that, but does it matter? No.
We won.
The only reason I wanted him to declare was because we played that well and you want to win, don't you? You're not going to get many better chances to win than...
No, but
almost like you thought it was coming, so you're like, right, yeah, let's just get on with it. Come on, let's just go and win the game. Then,
yeah, I've got to think, Pant can change a game in a session, you know. So, like I say, what do we by 8 o'clock in the morning at our time, once it we were done for,
and yeah, I was out of bed. Yeah, you weren't complaining. I think it's one of them, ain't it? If it had all gone wrong, fair enough. I think he'd have got plenty of criticism, but as he said, he'd batted on it for basically half a test match, and he was sure that they'd get at least a good half a good dozen chances on the last day because the pitch was a pile of shite, basically. So, fair
what
play
we,
to
what him. Did we, what did we say last week? It was ugly.
Ugly was being kind about it, I think, mate.
I think that's what I said, actually. The ugliest pitch he's ever seen, I think.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. I've seen a picture of the wicket for the next test, and it looks an absolute belter. So I think they've gone from ugly to like a sheet of glass.
Well, I don't know whether you saw my comment in the group chat earlier, but apparently India have sacked off their curator who'd never made a pitch before, bought in local groundsman who's never done a first-class pitch before, and have left it to him and the team management to sort the pitch. They've got rid of the red soil that gave it the orange look and have bought in black soil, which I think is really noticeable in the photo because it looks dead dark compared to the weird...
I've not actually seen it yet.
They've got a
Solero
week.
Thing. I know.
They've got a week's turnaround. What's going on? Surely this bit... First and foremost, like getting someone in, do these people like it's a professional club? Surely they employ someone to do this.
You would think so.
Like, do you know what I mean? Warwick should just don't get Dave off the street to come and prep a test match pitch for him, do you?
So it's either going to go one or two, isn't it? It's going to be 600 play 600, or it's going to be 80 all out play 70 all out.
I'm going 600 versus 600, then probably well, about 200 versus 180.
Take a draw this one, win the third. Draw or lose the other one. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, but you don't want win 2-1 because then that means the Aussies face New Zealand in the World Test Championship. So you've got to be careful.
Test Championship, load of rubbish.
Got to be careful.
We're top, mate.
We are top of the league.
We could finish top and not get in the final. It's the most berserk league I've ever seen in my life.
If you play five games, you've got to win 5-0 to get the same points as winning 2-0.
Yeah.
Like something like the percentage of games you play as well that you win. So because we play more games than anyone, we have to win more games than anyone.
We also play games in England when 4 days are washed out for rain.
Yeah, I hate to tell you, it's worth like a whole degree on its own trying to work out that table.
Yeah.
The other person I've got down as main man, but we'll just be quick on him because I think, let's be honest, everyone's probably already said it about him, but Jimmy Anderson, probably the best over I've ever seen away from home from an England player. Possibly the best over ever up there with Flintoffs. I mean, the reverse swing and just sending that off peg, absolutely cartwheeling both times was beautiful. And to be fair, I'd given the LBW out.
I've walked off. If that's happened to me, I'm walking. My back's under my arm and just like, listen, that's too good for me, pal. Off we go. See you later.
Impact just outside of the line. What a joke.
Absolutely not.
About a millimetre. But Jimmy Anderson, now, Aide disagreed with me the other day a bit, but I'm still saying it. Best bowler ever, 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 because no one has done it as well as him for as long as him and got continually better while doing it, which is the scary thing. He's 38, and he's just gone to India and ripped India, a new arsehole. Fucking brilliant.
I agree with so many points, but then I think, like, you know, all the people started off better and then just didn't play as long. So it all depends what you're going off, doesn't it?
I'm just going off the fact he's English and he's called Jimmy Anderson, mate.
Yeah.
I think we'll leave it there with Jimmy because otherwise we could just talk all night about the goat. The goat. forget Gary. Jimmy's the goat. Right, we'll move on to some player ratings then. So we'll go through the England lineup. We'll try and keep it nice and quick, he says. Rory Burns, we'll start with. I'm going to go a 4. Got a good start.
I concur with a four because
I went to four actually. Yeah,
that first inning showed a lot of promise. You know, he looked in actually really pretty good touch considering all things worth. I don't know whether he just got a bit of first. He just got a bit of a brain fart. Got excited, did he?
Got all excited. Five in the morning, and you're thinking England are batting class here and no danger, and then that pipe goes and tries that shot, and you're like, what the.
We'll go four, and he's been called a pipe by AIDS. I don't think he gets much worse.
Yeah,
than
and
he
got an absolute nut in the second innings as well. By the way,
yeah,
play that son, left-handed, last day. Thanks very much.
Moving on to Sibley, who was a bit of a hero, I'd say 80-odd off 300 balls in the first innings. I'm going to go out there and give him an 8 because I just really was impressed with last.
I'm going to come down one. I'm just going to go 7.
It's a 7 from Len.
Yeah, it's a 7.
7.
Just wish he'd, again, got a bit of a snorter, got a bit tired, but special mention just to soaking up that many balls because the Indians looked absolutely downtrodden after that Thursday.
Yeah.
And he just hit the ball in some berserk places. And he looked really, really positive, which was good. Like everything he seemed to try came off. That was nice to see.
Moving on to number 3 was Dan Lawrence. Now, I'm going to give the lad. I want to say higher than five. Yeah, I was going to say he deserves a 4 really because he's had basically the same game as Burns, but Burns pissed me off more. Whereas Dan Lawrence just got two good balls.
Rory Burns got 30 odd in the first inning.
Yeah, that's the issue. I'm going to go 4. I'm going to even it out.
Lawrence got about 18, didn't he?
Yeah, and then got another good ball. To be fair to him,
mate. 2.
I knew you'd say Lawrence. 2.
I'm going 4. I agree with Tony. Spain's really wound me up that morning.
Yeah, I know. That's the only reason.
So you're giving Dan Lawrence 4 because someone else should have got more runs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my basis. I'm not going to lie to you. Burns pissed me off.
If you get yourself an India,
Dan Lawrence got 2 good balls.
Can we just throw it out there as well that at least Rory Burns got out? I don't know. Actually, I'm a bit torn between this one. Would I rather Rory Burns get out playing an absolute ridiculous shot that he's no good at, or would I rather get out in the way that Dan Lawrence got out, where he got out missing a straight one, which is supposedly his favourite shot?
True. Yeah.
So it's I don't know which one to go with there.
Yeah. Let's be honest. Neither of them had a great game, and they're probably the only two question marks I would say left in this 11.
Both of them together aren't making what Root's getting, is he? Let's be honest. For the rating.
Yeah. Right. Root, 10. And if anyone doesn't give him a 10, I might just end the recording now, and that might be the end of the podcast.
Special mention to his cat. The only thing that I could possibly, I almost criticised him for, and it's not even in declaration because I thought he captained really well as well. Thought he changed it round first innings, even when we got a little bit stuck, he changed it round and stuff like that. That was good. Back Jack Leach up as well, which was good. I just wish he'd brought himself onto bowl a little bit sooner. I couldn't believe that he didn't bowl earlier, that was all. But he's still getting a 10.
Yeah, I thought he could have bowled earlier, but I also thought he doesn't want to yank Leach off or whoever too early because he doesn't want to destroy him early on in the series. He wants to give him the chance, but I'm you I'd have probably brought him on probably 5 or 6 overs earlier than he did. We'll move on.
10 into
it. Yeah, it's 10. We'll move on. Stokes, I'm going to go 8 because I think his innings was key, that first innings, to be fair. He motored on a bit, which gave us sort of that impetus to get to the real big score and get it to the point where I think without him, we'd have probably fell maybe 850-odd short of where we ended up, and we'd have maybe been in a bit more danger. Andy took the wicket to Coley. I know it stayed low, but he still took it, so.
Yeah, boost your bonus if you get in, mate.
And a good catch.
I'll go 8.5 for the 0.5 for getting Coley. Getting Coley in the catch.
Yeah, fair enough. Number 6 was Ollie Pope. I'm going to go for a solid 6. Good little bit of fielding at short leg, but as Jono will say, that's his job.
Not his job. His job is to score runs. If he's just in there to catch things, not his job.
At 6, I think he didn't do anything massively wrong, but he also didn't go on and get a big get a 50 or push on, which would have got him a higher score.
He looked sturdy, didn't he, in both
ends? Yeah.
I did think he looked a bit strapped.
He did look like he'd just come back.
He looked like a man who'd not picked a bat up in 12 months, didn't he?
Yeah.
He looked a bit rough.
But let's be fair, he looks better after 12 months out than most of us look after we play every week. So
true. Five.
What did you go, dude?
A 6, mate, yeah. Oh. Looked sturdy, didn't he, in both, but didn't really push on or anything.
Joss Butler, I'm going to go for a... I'm going to go 7.5. I wanted to say 8. Yeah, his glove work was really good. His batting was okay. It was decent.
What was that leave?
I know there was that leave, but he did bat well outside of that leave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've gone 7.
Yeah, I'll agree on the 7. I thought he kept really, really well, by the way.
Yeah, he did. Kept very well. Started to make people look a bit daft now about the... Oh, he's not a good enough keeper, because he clearly is. Yes,
he kept miles better than Pant.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think that's necessarily a big compliment, but yeah, he was a lot better.
Looks like he's got frying pans in his hands, doesn't he, sometimes? Yeah. Considering he plays all his cricket in India, he looks like he's washing pots and pans up.
Oh, Teflon, isn't he? moving on to number 8, John Bess. I'm going to go 7.5 for Bess.
This is tough.
I think this is the hardest one.
I think he bowled really well in the first innings. The ball to Coley was a great one. Another one of his balls was really good.
Not just the ball to Coley, he set Coley up for about 20 minutes.
That was the thing. And that, if you actually I was hearing earlier, someone was commenting on the fact that if you actually watched the game, as he was coming off the session before, he actually talking to Dom Sibley or someone, and you can see him saying to Dom Sibley what his plan is to get him. And he goes and fucking does it, so fair play to him. I thought he bowled
better in that first innings than he bowled the entire time in Sri Lanka.
Mm.
And it's just so typical of what he's done so far in his career for England, because he bowled like an absolute man with no arms in the second innings. That over where he just bowled full toss after full toss. One of the best players in the world just keeps smacking him through cover, through mid-wicket. Mate. Chuck it up for him. He's an international cricketer, man. And he was just literally lobbing grenades up. And it was just...
Yeah.
I almost felt sorry for him watching it. It was awful.
It's all then, trying to put the ratings in, because obviously Leach and Best both had one bad innings, didn't they? But I was saying to you, Tina, once in the week, I says, what the good thing is if one doesn't perform in one innings, the other seems to step up, don't they?
Yeah, that is helping.
And also, Best did chip in with runs in both innings.
Yeah.
That's why I think they'll always,
especially
in England, I reckon they'd always pick, at the minute anyway, pick Best over Leach. A, because he keeps picking up wickets, so you can't argue with the results, and two, he can hold a bat.
Yeah.
Say, England likes someone at number 8, don't we, that can hold a bat?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with 7 for Best.
7? What are you going for, dude?
I should try and get the ratings between him and Best.
Oh,
and
just go for it. 3, 2, 1.
I'm going 8.
Ooh, babe. Well, the average is...
What? 7.5. We'll go 7.5.
Yeah, he bowled an over a full toss. Is it one of the best players in the world?
Bloody hell. Moving on to number 9, Joffre Archer. I'm going to give him a 7. He bowled a good first spell, and he just bowled a couple of good spells early on.
Yeah.
Don't think it was necessarily made for him. He still doesn't look like he could bat for toffee, but I don't really care when he's bowling snorers.
What I liked about Roots captaincy, actually, when they were 9 down that second innings, brought Stokes off to get Archer on, didn't he? Because he probably knew he was going to get that last wicket, but I like that. When you're an opening bowler and sometimes you bowl your arse off, you don't get the luck, and then you get come on the tail. Which Jono never does.
Oh, there you are.
Big
Glenn politics coming out here.
I will say this, though. He did look slightly frightening, even on an absolute highway in Chennai.
His speeds were coming through at like 128, and I was like, they're definitely quicker than that.
Yeah,
that first innings, he looked like he put the shitters up him a little bit, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Which was quite funny. Yeah, he did. Definitely.
Can't wait for him bowl Tim Payne at the Gabby.
That's his role, though, isn't it? You don't mind him just doing that for 3 or 4 overs. That is literally his job. He's like a battering ram, isn't he?
Yeah. Moving on then, we have got at number 10, Jack Leach. I'm going to go an 8 for Leach. I thought he was a better bowler than Bess. He actually batted well as well, to be fair, but really good bowling in the second innings. First innings, I think he was a bit hard done to. He bowled well. He was hitting the footballs, but Rishabh Pant decided that he was going to go into almost like KP mode, was going to just run down the track and hit it straight out the footballs. And I think he was a bit, I don't want to say he was unlucky, because obviously it's just good batting, but
any single one of them shots could have just gone straight up in the air, and it did in the end, didn't it? So
yeah. The only thing is, he didn't really mix it up much, did he? He just kept bowling the same ball to him, and he just kept.
I think David Lloyd put on Twitter, you know, which I think is a big one for him. Exactly that. That's the one thing that Jack Leach kind of lacks, is any sort of variation. He relies on getting wickets on just being decent. Enough.
He uses natural variation, doesn't he? He works off the fact that the ball's never going to react the same off the pitch. He's not like...
He hasn't got a grain swan. He hasn't got a grain swan arm ball or something like that as he wants.
Probably because when you're bowling at Somerset, you probably don't need to, do you, to be fair?
You just want to rag.
Yeah.
7.5 for me. Better than Bess.
Well, I'll give Bess an 8.
Give him 7.5 in the end. Come on.
Yeah, I'll go 7.5 again.
Down. And last but not least, Jimmy Anderson. I'm going to go for a 9, especially for the reverse sweep off first ball, second innings, because why the hell not? Yeah, 9 for me for Jimmy. I thought he was really good in the first innings, to be fair. And then to come out on the last day, and I think without that spell, England might have struggled actually to get over the line. But when you've got
big momentum change, that was.
Yeah, when you've got Anderson, you're always going to get wickets at some point, aren't you? Fair play to him.
I'm going to give him 9.5. I'm going to trump you there. Just in terms of, like, I know he didn't. He might not have got like 6 or anything like that. Yeah. But the guy's 38. He single-handedly changed the game that second innings. And you talk about like winning. How often do we talk about like club cricket? Someone go and win you a game. Like, in my opinion, he won that game on his own just for that over on that last day. And what's he's averaging something like 9 so far across Sri Lanka and India, isn't he?
Yeah, ridiculous. Absolute madness.
Spare effort.
Yeah, 9. What are you aiming for, dude?
Yeah, I've got a 9 as well, yeah.
Round. Right, we were going to do the India, but we're already 40 minutes in, so just a quick one on the Indian team. How bad were their bowlers, their spin bowlers? I just want to mention Odin Nadeem and Washington Sundar. Washington Sundar can bat, don't get me wrong. Pair of them didn't look like test match spin bowlers in India for me.
They're not Ravi Jadeja, are they?
No.
Can you also mention Sharma as well?
If you want to mention Sharma. Not Ishant,
Rohit.
Rohit.
What I want to know, mate, is where's he been hat?
And dropped the biggest dolly I've
dolly,
ever seen.
Yeah. I won't even mention the dolly, but oh my God.
I want to know where he's been hiding that bald patch. Because that is an outstanding old man patch on the back
that's
of his
body. That's why he always wears a cap.
In Australia, he bowled seam up, and then he's bowling some offies, runs. He hasn't got a clue what he's doing.
Just, by the way, I don't know if you boys have seen this, but you're just reminding me with it, bowling seam up, then offies. Who saw Tim Payne returning in grade cricket one-day final, opening the batting, and then taking the new nut, opening the bowling with seam up, then coming back later on and bowling rank offies and getting a wicket. Absolute filth.
He also just kept bowling wide after wide.
Wide, yeah, legs out. He couldn't bowl to a left handy. He bowled good balls
to
a right hand.
It's a bit, but he just kept going, swinging it down leg side.
Yeah, 65 mile an hour, just dibbly dobbly.
By the way, did you see his scorecard?
I don't know if they won it. I don't, be honest, I don't really care. I just found
I saw when he got his first wicket, they were like 200 for 3.
Yeah. Right, what we'll do then is we'll quickly have a little look ahead at the teams, and then it'll be time for get the Pat Brown interview in. So, just quickly looking at England's team, obviously the big news is that Jofra Archer's missing out. We obviously know Butler's gone home, so Ben Folkes will obviously, I'm sure, come in for him. So the only real question, because I can't see any other changes personally, is what happens with the bowling attack. Obviously, we're expecting Jimmy out and Broad in, but now Jofra's out, do you go with Jimmy and Broad? Do you go with Broad and then one of Wokes or Ollie Stone? That is the only real thing for England now. It's who is bowling for them. So we'll keep it pretty short and sweet. All I want from each of you is the two seam bowlers you'd pick and why. Quickly, we'll go for Dude first.
Ooh, it all depends. If England wants Anderson for this third test,
we're not. No, I don't want any of that. I don't want any iffing or butting about.
Well, if you could, I'd have Broad and Anderson if they could play every game, but they're not going
to. That's who you'd have.
Broad and Stone.
That's who we're going for. Jono, who are you going for then?
I'm going to go Anderson and Wokes.
Anderson and Wokes, interesting.
I think Anderson stays in, I think Wokes comes in as well.
I'm a little bit stuck on it, I'll be honest, but I would be tempted to go Jimmy and Broad if Jimmy is, and they feel, as long as they feel that Jimmy can play three games in a row, I would pick Jimmy and Broad. I still don't think in that day-night test where people think they'll play Jimmy and Broad together, I don't think they will. I think they'll play one plus Chris Wokes and still play Joffre Archer, or assuming Joffre isn't fit, then maybe they will play them both. But Joffre's meant to be fit for the third test, so I think they'll go Joffre, Jimmy, and probably Wokes in the third test instead of Best, so that you've got that bit of batting. I think this test, as long as Jimmy's able to do it, I'd go Jimmy and Broad. If Jimmy can't do it, then fair enough, you pick Ollie Stone or Wokes, and probably Wokes, to be fair, to add a bit of batting, because if we lose the toss, we're going to need plenty of batting. But it'll be interesting to see.
You're losing Archer, and Archer can't hold a bat, so.
Well, yeah.
Or despite the fact that everyone in the world keeps claiming that, he can bat,
but only if it's white and he's wearing.
Do you think Wokes will be decent, though, if this pitch is going to be like concrete?
I think Wokes is a better player than he's given credit for, to be fair.
Yeah. He's just the only problem is when he played away from home before, he was rubbish. And he's not had much of a chance overseas since, has he? So
no, it's been a few years and he's got better, but he's only got better as far as we know, obviously, in England. So I'm assuming it'll have got better away from home as well, because his skills have improved, but there's no guarantee.
Is that Shakib in the squad, or is he the reserve?
Shakib Mahmood's one of the reserves, mate. So I can't see him getting a game.
If it's going though, it's reversing. Wokes will get it go. If he was playing as well as Anderson, I'd have in that first Test match, I'd have backed him to be swinging it like Anderson was as well, because he can certainly do it when we're playing at home. So
yeah,
I couldn't have done it there.
I just think that attack was decent once with Archer, obviously. Someone who had that bit of extra pace. Obviously, you've got Anderson and Stokes who can, you know, move the ball about, and then you've got the two spinners, haven't you? Whereas I think if you have Wokes and Anderson, probably going to be, well, it depends if it's Wokes and Broad, you're probably just doing similar jobs, aren't they?
They are, but my concern would still be, and Ollie Stone's clearly a good bowler, but do you really want a young lad making his test? Well, I know it's not his test debut because he played against Ireland, wasn't it? Do you want him really coming out for this test in Chennai? Debatable. I'd almost rather him be in the pink ball test out of any, just because he might get a bit more. Thing was, as well, being funny, Joffre bowled well, but he didn't exactly set the world alight. And Joffre is a much better bowler than Ollie Stone. So I don't know. It's a difficult one. I'll be interested to see who they pick. And the good thing I would say is, no matter who they pick, I trust them to be a good enough player to have an effect on the game and not cost them a load.
If you're picking the likes of Ollie Stone and Joffre for what they're doing, you're literally just picking them right now as like a battering ram. So
yeah,
you're not asked about anything they do. The only thing you're asked about right now, I think, if you're picking them, is pick them. To just ask them to bowl three or four overs quickly, probably a bit of short stuff, just see what you can get out of it. Rough the ball up for a bit, hurt someone if you can.
Yeah.
That's what their job is. That's why I think Mark Wood will come. I think Mark Wood might well come straight back in when he's back over there.
Yeah, if Joffre's not fit, definitely I would say for that one. Quickly on India, it appears that what happened in the first test was it was meant to be Axar Patel at 7 and Kuldeep Yadav, they reckon, at 8. The moment that, well, not at 8, was it? It'd be 9, is it, or whatever he was. What happened was, as Axar Patel hurt his knee half an hour before, so they had to bring Sundar in for the extra batting. And then because they didn't want three bowlers bowling it the same way, bowling it the same direction, turning away or whatever, they then chose to pick the reserve left arm spinner in the team. So they think that because Axar Patel is fit, Axar Patel will come in. Kuldeep Yadav, the left arm, wrist spinner, leggy, will come in and just replace them too. Do you see any other changes?
I just didn't even get rid of that Nadeem mate because he was pants.
I reckon
even we'd have knocked him back with a roll up sentinel. Weren't him in Washington going that Washington Sundar were going at some like 4.5 and over at one point in the first inning. They both bowled about 20 overs each.
Yeah, Kohli actually came out at the end and basically said, "My spinners, other than Ravi, didn't offer me any control." Basically,
so that's why I can't see should make play. Any changes, mate.
Yeah.
The boys make no changes.
Yeah, just keep it out as lads. Thanks very much.
Yeah, we'd like that. So yeah, I think the Indian team seems to be pretty self-explanatory. Right then, what we'll do now is we'll stop our little chat and we'll get in our guest for tonight. It was Worcestershire and England's T20 star Pat Brown. We had a really good chat with him on Sunday.
Lovely lad, good laugh.
So here is our interview from Sunday with Pat Brown. So it's another Sunday afternoon on the Down at Third Man podcast, and we're really lucky to have yet another fantastic guest with us for the next half an hour. We've got with us today someone who's known for his deaf bowling and his knuckle balls, and that is England and Worcestershire's T20 fast bowler, Pat Brown. Welcome, Pat. How are we?
Thank you. All good, thank you. All good. How about yourself?
Good, cheers. Just a little bit chilly in Stoke, but nothing changes there.
No.
Although saying that, I am wearing shorts, so it's my own fault. Right, we'll start off dead simple, and just wanted to know a little bit about sort of how you got into cricket, because we do a lot about sort of club cricket and getting people involved in cricket, so I'd be really interested to hear how you got involved. Was it the Ashes in 2005 that got you into it, and the Free to Air TV, or a family member? Or
yeah, I think it was probably a combination, really. I think obviously the 2005 Ashes played a big part in everyone our age, in our age group, really getting into cricket for the first time. And the other thing was my dad, really, who was more of a footballer than a cricketer, but for some reason didn't let me play football till I was 11 or 12, which I really wanted to do a lot more than cricket. So it was either cricket or nothing at that age. So that was sort of what I got into at a younger age and sort of went from there, really.
I feel like a lot of cricketers secretly really wanted to be footballers. It seems to be a common theme.
100% all failed footballers.
Is it like us teachers? Those who failed doctors became teachers, and those who failed at football has become cricketers. I don't want to say like you failed at football or anything. I'm not just diving straight in with a full-on insult. But
so, nah, I knew I wasn't good enough. I didn't even try to succeed at football.
That's why we all try play in the warm-up, don't we? Because there's still some little bit of hope there.
Our football sessions in training are more competitive than the training sessions when we're bowling at each other.
I reckon that's what it is. You know, I reckon it's just pure instinctive, the fact that there's a hidden Ronaldo number 9 in all of us, isn't there?
Just,
who's the dark horse of the Worcestershire and England clan then, of the football warm-ups?
Footballing. Ed Barnard's a very good footballer. He's probably the best in our squad, sort of technically and skills-wise, but Daryl Mitchell, as his batting is really, he gets the job done dirty. Just runs the game.
Efficient.
Yeah, he is. He's probably the best. If you have him on your team, you win.
I like that. You're a born winner. Win at all cost mentality, even in the
world. Yeah, even if it means cheating.
See, Johnny, you're a paid footballer, so you become a ref.
Yeah, that's it. That's those who fail.
I must admit.
Told you, mate. Teachers. Nightmare.
Must admit, one of my favourite things with football warm-ups in the professional game seems to be the fact that the actual goalkeepers have now started wearing goalkeeping gloves. Seems to be a little bit too serious.
Nah, it's precaution, mate. You don't want to break your finger. They have to wear gloves. We have Ross Whiteley in goal, who's big into ice hockey, and he's unbelievable. So we go old players with younger ones. So they have Mitch and Ross in goal. You literally can't get the ball past, so we never win. Small goals as well. It's impossible.
Ross Whiteley signed as a pro in our league.
Yeah.
Signed as a pro in our league.
Yeah.
Glad
yeah.
I don't play in that league, I'll be honest with you. Glad I'm lower down. Ashcombe Park he's signed for.
Oh, we might have them in the cup.
Yeah. Brilliant. First round of the cup at home. He's going to be playing against us.
How good is he? He's going to be a lot better than
us. Once we finish this, you can give some tips just in case.
Yeah, how to get him out.
Yeah, we've basically got one corner. We've got like a cut-off corner because of a road. So we've got one very short cow corner boundary to a left-hander and then an enormous one towards the road the other end. So
I think you'll still probably have that covered.
I might come down and watch that day, boys. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
The tactics to him generally is just hope he hits one straight up. And if he doesn't, you're in trouble.
Was he? I hope I'm not under it. That's all I'm saying. I hope I'm not under it.
Hey? Might be injured that day.
You're opening bowl and don't fancy it, mate.
Yeah, I'm just unavailable, mate. Might not even pick myself. That's how bad it might get.
So I noticed that you were discovered at a Pace Factor Open Day, was it? So just wondered how that all came about and how you ended up at Worcestershire.
Yeah, so I'm from Peterborough, so quite a distance from Worcester, 2.5 hours. Where I lived, really, there wasn't a first-class county nearby, so there wasn't that route into cricket, really, that someone who is from Worcester has. So for me, really, I started taking it a little bit more seriously and not really with a view to get into professional cricket, but just to improve and be better. I was playing first team or Premier League cricket in Lincolnshire, aged 15 or 16, I think. So I was pretty skillful, but probably not big enough or didn't know how to play men's cricket, really. So it was really just, I got in touch with a couple of guys called Ross Dewar and Stefan Jones who have a company called Cricket Strength. And it was really just with a view to sort of get better for my club side and sort of get into my first team at the club more regularly, because I was sort of in and out of it. So it was really with just a view to that and nothing more, and then sort of started doing it and improved quite a bit under them and just went from there, really. And like you mentioned, the Pace Factor Day, it was literally just a day for fast bowlers where your speed gets clocked, and there were a few first class coaches there. But again, I went into that totally naive and didn't even think about the coaches there. I literally just wanted to see how fast I could bowl. Just this sort of tearaway young kid just thinking, I want to bowl as fast as I can.
Make the speed and, say 80.
Yeah, literally, I got 79. I was gutted. And I probably bowled faster then than I do now. But it was, that route went really well. And again, sort of just went on this journey that I had no idea what I was doing or didn't really take it in. So sort of had trials at six or had offered trials at six first class teams. And then sort of just went down the Worcestershire route for a few reasons.
Nice. Worcestershire, we've had, obviously from our league, we've had a handful of lads who've kind of been in and out of Worcestershire kind of age group setups, haven't we? I can think of a couple off the top of my head. Zen Malik was down. I don't know whether he still play for Worcestershire seconds as well.
Did Louis Allison, or have I made that up in my head? Where did Louis Allison do a bit?
Yeah, he was somewhere, didn't he?
Yeah, can't remember if it was Worcestershire or Warwickshire. Yeah, somewhere like that.
Warwickshire, Derbyshire, Worcestershire. We've had a few lads in and out. But a lot of them have only ever got like positive words to say about Worcestershire. And one thing that you always get, like a common theme, I don't know what your views on it are, is obviously from being from a county that's only got a minor county that kind of feeds every now and again the likes of Derbyshire and places like that, Warwickshire, Worcestershire. A lot of the lads that come back from Worcestershire say, oh, kind of a bit more of, they looked after me a little bit better.
Kind of
a bit more part of it. I mean, that's literally from someone who's never been anywhere near any form of county cricket in their life other than sitting in a stand. But yeah, so we kind of, like, as club cricketers, get that vibe from people who we know who've come back into club cricket. Is that kind of the vibe you got? Or
yeah, definitely. And but that's certainly one of the reasons that drew me there. So straight away, going to a training session as an outsider, really, to an academy session where there's probably 10 or 11 lads who know each other really well, who are from Worcester, who are 16, 17 at the time, but have played with each other from the age of 10. So it's really easy for there to be like a big click and just to feel really outside of everything. But there wasn't any of that at all. And you sort of, even though I wasn't one of them, I was made to feel like one of them from the start, even before I'd been offered a place on the academy, even when it's just joining in a couple of times to see how I went. And that's something that kind of stayed with me really. And it sort of, it gives you that feeling that, and now looking back, I know that nothing changes from then on. And sort of when you're that age, you think, well, if I'm being treated well now and I'm a complete nobody on an academy where no one really cares if I'm there or not, if I'm being treated well at that point, I'm probably going to be looked after from then on if I do well. So that's certainly one of the things that drew me there. And yeah, like you say, from people you know, that certainly is the case. I think we looked after really well at Worcester and we look after each other well as well.
Good. What's your... So just on the club cricket thing, I mean, we love club cricket, especially proper village club cricket on this podcast. What are your kind of like club cricket commitments now? Do you ever get the chance to go back to your club? Any club commitments around like Worcestershire? Did he send you out to a club, any club cricket at all?
I'm not allowed to play for my club back home. We all play in the Birmingham League now.
Okay.
Apart from obviously Ross, who's joined that league. But yeah, we... Most of it, unless you're in like first team for all formats, so sort of like an Ed Barnard, you have to at least be registered with a club. So certainly for bowlers, if there's a week where there's not a lot of second team cricket, you get your overs in on a Saturday. So I played for a few teams now. So Kidderminster, Barnard's Green, and I'm at West Brom now. Played for Dorwich a couple of years ago as well. So yeah, it's quite good fun to go and play on a Saturday. And if you can get a good group of lads where it's not taken too seriously, then it's perfect.
What's the standard like then? Compare it to kind of against the professionals on a midweek in like a Royal London game or something. What's it like going back to club cricket on a Saturday? Big difference or no?
It's strange. Yeah, I actually prefer bowling at sort of blokes, professional lads. It's weird, like, especially when you have a little bit of pace. Like, I'm not rapid, but quick enough for a club cricketer to be a bit scared, but not quick enough that they're not good enough to hit it. So I get absolutely whacked in club cricket normally. Like, just stepping away and slashing over the point and that sort of thing. Yeah, when I was playing for Kidderminster, the captain said, "What do you reckon?" I said, "I don't think I can bowl in the power play, mate." There's not enough fielders for me. So I started bowling after 10 overs and started doing a bit better.
Aide sitting there right now, just thinking to himself, like, yeah, this is me.
I can feel the vibe.
I'm really glad it's not just not just us, really.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible. And you don't know I don't know where they're even trying to hit me a lot of the time. At least, like, with someone who's not a little bit scared of the ball, I know where they're trying to hit me. But with blokes backing away, I've just got no idea what they're trying to do.
I love how we've essentially said here, like, my question was like, I was almost expecting a little bit of like, yeah, for the good players, there's like not really that much difference. Like, some of them could maybe even like make the step up from time to time. And then basically we've got to, they haven't got a clue what they're doing. And I've got even less clue of what to do with them.
There's definitely a few good players in the Birmingham Premier. I don't think skill-wise, there's not a lot of difference with sort of the top three or four batters. I think as something that Kevin Sharp, one of our coaches, says a lot, there's often what separates sort of a top like international cricketer from a county cricketer or a county cricketer from a club cricketer is sort of knowing how to play cricket. He said it's easy to play cricket. It's knowing how to play cricket that sort of takes you to that next step. And I think when I think about that and sort of think about it in action, you see it quite often with, like, someone like Zen, who you mentioned. Zen is so talented and skill-wise is more than capable of being a pro, but he just did daft things over and over again and made the same mistakes. And that's sort of where sort of what Sharpie was saying, like, you need to know how to play cricket as much as just being able to play cricket. And that's something that I think is the major difference between sort of each level that you go up. It's just knowing how to apply your skills.
Say, because there's a lad we know at the Jono. I don't know if you ever played against him, Liam Banks. played for England.
Yeah.
And every time he comes back down here playing in the Prem cricket and stuff, he'll get easily over like 1,000 runs and averaging over 100. And then obviously he got released from Warwickshire, didn't he? But I think he might be having a couple of trials. But every time he's played around here, he just looks a class above. But then
he makes club cricket look a joke, doesn't he?
Banksy's a really good player. I was surprised they released him. I think he's probably been a victim of sort of what's gone on over the last year or so with COVID. I think had that not have happened, he would still be a professional, which is unfortunate for him. But I didn't know he had trials anywhere. So hopefully he can get a contract somewhere, because he's a good lad and he's a good cricketer as well. I was surprised they let him go.
Devious cricketer.
Mm. So we sort of mentioned at the top, obviously, you're most known for your T20 and your sort of death bowling. And obviously, back in 2018, you were lucky enough to go and win the... Well, I say lucky enough, obviously, you deserved it with 31 wickets. You went and won the Blast. What's it like on a finals day? Because I know as fans, like, it looks an amazing day. The atmosphere looks different level, especially when you got Flintoff and Bumble singing a bit of Sweet Caroline. But what's it actually like being on that pitch?
No, it's strange. I think for us at Worcester, we'd never really experienced anything like that before that day. And I think the best way to describe it, as someone said, is it's sort of the closest you'd get to international cricket without playing international cricket. I think the atmosphere that's created on finals day and just everything around it is incredible. So, yeah, it was mental. 25,000 in on the piers. When we get to the final, no one's even watching the cricket. It's sort of strange because you know there's so many people there, but you also know there's probably half of them who aren't even watching.
Oh, I can tell you, it looks absolutely amazing from the top deck of that temporary stand, mate. By about 5 o'clock, it looks absolutely outstanding.
Yeah,
from what you can see, anyway.
If you can still see through your beer goggles, eh, Jono?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that probably your greatest one of your greatest achievements, winning the Blast then?
I think as a team, definitely it was. Yeah, I think we sort of came from nowhere from the start of the season. No one really talked about us even getting to finals day. And then we did really well in the group stage and obviously got to finals day. And then I remember before the finals day and the build-up, there was sort of articles and stuff about who's the favourites and all of that, and literally nobody anywhere gave us even a chance or a mention of winning. So for us, that was like, brilliant, we've got nothing to lose here. We just turn up, enjoy the day, and know that if we perform like we have done and play to the best of our ability, then we're as good or if not better than any of the other teams there. So yeah, it was pretty special for us.
What's it like on a finals day when you don't end up going on and winning it? Because I remember hearing an interview where I'm sure someone said they'd rather lose in the semi because they can go on the piss all day after than win the semi and lose the final. Would you agree with that assertion, or is that maybe a little bit far-fetched?
Nah, I think I'd rather get to the final still. We obviously, 2019, we obviously did that and lost in the final on the last ball to Essex. So that was pretty hard to take, but it's still an incredible day, and losing in the final is as bad as it is, it's still an amazing achievement to get there and sort of to be able to take it all in. And in a weird sort of way, I actually sort of enjoyed the hours after the final when we lost it than I did when we won it for some reason. I think I was just able to take it in all a bit more and sort of enjoy the company of all the boys. Whereas when we won it, it was a little bit hectic, like people everywhere and sort of not knowing what to do with yourself. So, it's a strange one. But yeah, weirdly, I actually enjoyed the night after we lost the final more than when we won it.
It's a proper little turner into just like a proper club cricket thing. So our format for like our club 2020 is basically the same as finals day. So all of the away clubs play first, and then whoever's hosting, they play in like the second semi-final later in the day. So your absolute target is to get absolutely hammered during your first game, and then you get to watch at least someone decent play 20-20 cricket for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
The worst feeling is winning first on and then having to spend your whole day, usually in the baking sunshine, absolutely desperate to go and either get on it or do something else.
Or you just go and end up wandering to the pub anyway, like we
Or you just go for a wander at the pub anyway.
End up in the wheat sheaf like dude does. Shocker. Yeah.
Ending up against someone who's got a proper class overseas pro is also not a good place to be on 2020 day. Because you're in for a 20 over.
And it's a way around knowing you're going to lose.
Yeah. Who did we play against? Oh, yeah. Dominic Cork's son was a pro in our league a couple of years ago. Greg.
He played for Derby, didn't he?
Yeah. That wasn't a very pleasant day.
He's in the pocket, mate. He's in the pocket.
Yeah. He got 80 odd at the time. Very quickly.
You don't need to know
still
that.
Counts. Still counts.
He's in
caught there. In your armpit.
Caught in my armpit. Never made contact with the hand. Hit every part of my body but the hand. But yeah. Pat, have you ever had... I don't want to steal Peter's thunder on the England question that's probably coming up. Have you had a starstruck moment? Like, have you ever thought, like, standing at the end of your run or you walk onto a field and just gone, oh my God, I'm bowling at such and such. Or, oh my God, who's that batting? A bit of a, oh my God.
Yeah, not so much when I was playing, actually. It was my first season, I think, so it might have been 2017. We played Edgbaston on TV and Flintoff was doing the commentary and he walked into the change room to use the toilet and I was like, 18, 19 at the time. I think I was 18. And I looked at this massive fella, just like say hi, be completely normal with everyone. And like, as you mentioned earlier, 2005 Ashes, he was my hero. And I was like, oh my Lord, like, what am I doing? This doesn't feel right. That's the biggest starstruck moment I've had. Not so much on the field.
But that was using the bog as well. What a guy.
Yeah, exactly. It was amazing. But just like to see someone like that who we probably all looked up to so much and still do is just be a completely normal. And it probably makes even better that he was just doing something like going to the toilet. Like he wasn't doing anything amazing. He was just like, this is mental.
You went to Melbourne Stars, but obviously you got injured. How did you find the experience over there?
It was good, yeah, it was good. So they had Dale Steyn over there as well, which was, again, one of my heroes growing up as a fast bowler. So that was incredible, sort of spending probably 3-4 weeks with him, just watching how he goes about stuff and asking him questions, just chatting to him about anything, really. So that was pretty special. And obviously the Melbourne Stars team was incredible. I turned up as an overseas and I was like, fucking hell, I'm ninth on the team sheet here, or something like that. I had like six lads who played Test cricket and another who played ODI cricket. It was like, this is different level. So yeah, that was pretty amazing. So to be out there with all them guys and watch them and sort of try and bring as much back here to Worcester as I can for our boys and to learn as much as I could off there for me as well was brilliant. So that was a really good experience. Obviously disappointing I couldn't play, but I feel like I learned plenty from it still anyway.
How does the kind of like learning process, or how do you go about kind of like the learning process then over there? So obviously disappointing you didn't play, but did you kind of like tap into those guys, or were they quite, a lot of them were quite naturally good at like going to you and kind of like seeking you out? What do you think about this? How did that little relationship work?
Yeah, a lot of the time was sort of spent, you have to sort of seek advice. So it wasn't even like seeking advice. It was just talking cricket and just seeing how different people go about things differently, seeing how people's mindset is around stuff, seeing what people are thinking, trying to tap into people's plans at different stages, so power play, middle overs and death. Sort of. I think the hardest thing for me has been to sort of bowl in the middle overs because I'm not really aware of what my role is. So trying to learn off people who do that quite often was good for me. I know I spoke to our coach, our bowling coach at Worcester when I was bowling overs in the middle. And I was like, I don't actually know what I'm trying to do here. Am I trying to take a wicket? Am I trying to go for seven in the over? Or what does a good over look like in the middle? Because I think at what I'd been so used to is bowling in the power play and at the death. It's really obvious what a good over looks like. If you go for less than sort of 8 runs, and then you've done a good job. And if you take a wicket, even better. Whereas I don't really know what a good over in the middle over looks like, and I still don't really know that. So that's something I'm trying to learn.
Who was the who had the best advice then? Who's the best teacher? Best advice that you picked up while you were over there?
A few, really. Nathan Coulton-Isle was good, so he's probably a different type of bowler to me. He's a lot of sort of pace on, but really hit the deck hard, which is, it's good for me to see and sort of learn how to do that and his mindset, because I feel like if I just try and hit back for length 6 times, it might work for 2 of the balls, but the other 4 are going to disappear somewhere. So sort of seeing how he goes about that and sort of how he holds his nerve, really. So I find it quite hard if I've bowled the same ball twice to think I'm going to do it again, especially if it's pace on. Whereas he's sort of got this mindset of that's his best ball and he wants to be hit off it. So sort of just tapping into his mindset. Another, obviously Dale Steyn was another one. So he spoke about in the IPL, they wanted him to bowl Yorkers, and he was like, no, I'm not bowling Yorkers. I've bowled hard length for my whole career and done really well. I'll bowl Yorkers if hard length doesn't work. So just sort of that backing and the belief in your plan and what your best ball is, really, was something I've learned off them guys and tried to bring into my game. It's quite powerful, really. If you can go into a game and know that what your best ball is and you're not moving off that unless it's dictated to you, it's quite powerful, I think. So it certainly helped my plans going forwards from there.
What's it like bowling on pitches over there? Because we've had a few lads who play, like from over here, will go play club cricket in Australia, and they'll say like the pitches are just completely different. And like, say, if you're a batsman, say, you know, it's just 10 times better than batting on pitches over here.
Yeah, I've never actually played over there, so I didn't actually get to play a game before I got injured, unfortunately. But the pitch looked pretty flat. I don't think I missed out on too much. But the boundaries over there are quite big, so I think it would have suited me all right. So it's quite big boundaries, so you have that in your favour at least.
So as Jono mentioned, obviously you made your debut for England over in the T20s in New Zealand. How was that, and are you hoping to obviously get back into the team in the next couple of years, or what are your ambitions in terms of England now?
Yeah, that was incredible, really. It sort of came out of nowhere, and coming off the disappointment of losing the final against Essex in 2019, I didn't really expect too much from England. I had a better season the season before and didn't really hear anything, so I was sort of, it wasn't even on my radar, really. So to hear I was in the squad was amazing. And then obviously you don't expect to play. And when I got out there, Owen Morgan said, you're definitely going to play at least a game. So I was like, well, it's a nice sort of confidence booster that you're not out there just to carry drinks. So he says that, and I'm thinking I'll play 1 or 2 games if I'm lucky. And to play 4 out of the 5 out there was pretty good. And an amazing experience, and something that, one of the toughest things really, and that step up, the biggest step up really, again, was sort of guys being more aware of their own game and knowing how to go about playing. So someone like Colin de Grandhomme, who I really struggled to bowl to, his plan didn't change game to game. His plan was to take you down and in his areas and not elsewhere. He stuck to that really well, and I struggled with that. And I also kind of, the biggest step up for it was sort of playing the same guys 4 times in a row. So in county cricket, you obviously only play people twice a year, and them 2 games are probably separated by 3-4 weeks. So people don't really get to have a good look at you. Whereas playing, I think it was within like 9 days, I played 4 games against the same people who are already ridiculously good players and better than me. So it was a real challenge to sort of try and stay rigid in your plans in terms of knowing what your best ball is, but also knowing that they know what's coming, which is pretty daunting, really. So that was quite tough. In terms of sort of getting back there, I think after the season I just had, which wasn't great, it looks further away than it did do sort of a year ago. So for me, really now, I've spoke to our bowling coach a bit, and I've just sort of got the mindset of going back from square one. So going back to the start of 2018, really, when I hadn't achieved anything and hadn't played for even for Worcester many times. I've played 6 games for Worcester. So going back to that sort of mindset and just trying to re-establish myself in the team, even though sort of my place is for now sort of assured in Whitehall cricket, but trying to reaffirm that and nail it down again and go from there. So yeah, in terms of England stuff, that's not really on my radar at all at the moment.
So obviously we'll just sort of finishing off then. Looking ahead at the season coming up, obviously planning, fingers crossed, we'll have a full county season, the Blast, the One Day Cup and the 100 as well. What are you sort of hoping to get from 2021? What would be your sort of like dream 2021?
I'd love to win a tournament, but obviously that's not going to happen for everyone. So that's obviously the dream. But I think we had a pretty poor T20 campaign last year. So if we could sort of get into their knockout positions and give ourselves a chance, I think with our sort of experiences of knockout cricket in the last 3 years, if we can get into them games, I feel like we've got a pretty good chance of turning up. So I think realistically, if we got into sort of the top three in our group, that'd be a pretty good season. For me, I'd like to sort of reaffirm myself as being sort of the first bowler, at least on the team sheet. So that would be success to me, being able to do that. And in terms of stats, I'm not really too bothered, because sort of as a cricketer when you've done well and when you haven't. And certainly in 2020, your stats don't pack that up all the time. Certainly not over a 1 or 2 game period. So for me, last year was really hard coming off injury and didn't really have much feel, or I didn't feel good when I bowled. So as much as anything, I just want to get that back and feel good when I bowl and have that nice feeling when the ball comes out of your hand and you know it's a decent ball, which I've not had for a while. So that'd be the aim. It's quite hard to sort of put a goal on that, because it's completely feel. So that would be what a sort of successful season would look like for me, I think. And if I could play some Red Bull cricket as well, that'd be really good for me. I'd like to do that. I've had a bit of a hiccup with my back again, so it's not likely before probably the 100. But if I could get fit and stay fit, really, if I could sneak a couple of Red Bull games in after the 100 when everyone's tired and maybe there's a couple of injuries, I think that'd be a successful season for me.
Well, good. Now, we've talked a lot of cricket, but I am going to finish on something that's not really related to cricket at all. My teammate at Wedgwood, Tom Smith, goes uni at Worcester, so I'll give him a little shout out. Now, on Freshers Week in his first year a couple of years ago, he was pissed up in the Sinnenbush, is it?
Yeah.
And he says he didn't know where the toilets were and he was battered, and he came up to you not realising who you were and asked you where the bogs were, and you directed him to the bogs, and he came out after he'd had a piss and realised that he just made a complete twat of himself in front of Pat Brown. But apparently he was also really excited and told all his mates about the fact he's met you. So even though all he did was ask you where the bog was. So
I'm just glad I didn't tell him to get lost.
Well, he asked for one question and one question only. He wanted to know whether you prefer the Sinnenbush or Tramps.
I think Sinnenbush for me. Tramps is only a Wednesday. Sinnenbush is any other night.
Tramps I was really, really wondering where that question was going.
He loves talking about Tramps and basically his nights out in Worcester, but that's possibly my favourite story he's ever told me, about the fact that he was dead excited that he'd met you. I was like, you haven't really met Pat Brown, you've asked him where to go for a slash. It don't really. I'm not counting it particularly.
Yeah, he's not going to remember who you are.
Well, I definitely remember that when you started. I was like, shit, I've not done anything bad here, have I?
It's like, I wonder if he's like, when he hears this, where he's just going to be expecting like a light bulb moment to go off, where you see you on screen and he just goes, "Oh yeah, I remember, yeah, I remember."
They're close. They're close.
Yeah.
Right, on that slightly odd note, just like to say a big thanks for obviously giving up a bit of your Sunday afternoon to come on with three random lads from Stoke.
And my pleasure.
The best of luck for the season ahead. We'll be keeping an eye out for Worcestershire and obviously for the 100 as well. So just the best of luck, really. And I don't know if Jono and Aid want to add anything.
No, just a big thank you. A big shout out to
thank you.
All the first class lads who turn out for their clubs whenever, so we'll keep an eye on some Birmingham League Premier scores as well.
Please don't.
See if any left-handed whackers have taken Pratt Brown downtown on a Saturday afternoon. He's looking for some match practice, but no. A big thank you, mate. We appreciate it.
No, pleasure.
Cheers.
Yeah,
cheers, boys.
I'm sure Pat's going to be checking the North Staff scorecards now just to see Ross Whiteley's put aid for 6-6s.
Yeah, we'll do another one of these just before we play against him.
We'll send you a message just to how badly we went on. I was saying that, actually, don't forget, in the first round, it's actually it's Ross Whiteley versus Zen Malik in the first round. Yeah, we got a bye, fortunately, which is just great. We're a great cup side. but yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Zen Malik versus Ross Whiteley goes in the first week, and then we play the winners in the second week. So see how we go.
Nice one, Pat. Thank you very much for joining
Cheers,
us.
Boys.
Have a good one.
No worries. Take care.
Cheers, Pat. Thank you.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky with so many options to choose from. How do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Right, you're back with me, Jono, our aide. We had really good interview, as you probably just heard, with Pat Brown. Really good laugh. Think he got a bit concerned about the old Sin and Bush and Tramps chat involving Tom Smith. But good lad, good laugh. Clearly a very good cricketer with his head screwed on, and I'd just big thank you to Pat, really, for giving up his time. What anything Absolutely. You boys picked up?
Just hope he can sort his back out and get back in that England squad soon as. I know he mentioned on Sunday, didn't he? He might have had a bit of a setback. So
yeah,
enjoyed watching him in New Zealand. So hopefully, enjoy watching him have a good summit.
That's the plan.
Right then. Can help me out when we play against Ross. Well, yeah. Play against Ross Whiteley.
I think you might need a bit more than his help, mate. I'll be able to tell you. Right, speaking a little bit there, club cricket, we'll move on to our club cricket section that we always sort of do in the back end of our show. Before we get into, I guess it's club cricket related, is the giveaway we're doing. So our sponsors, our supporters, Woodstock, been very kind. They've given us three bags to give away. All you got to do is send us your best club cricket stories. You can send them as on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, via our new email address that we've put out on Twitter today. Literally, however you want to send them to us, you send them to us. We've had some absolute corkers so far.
I'm a bit concerned that all of the good stories seem to involve nakedness. I hope we've all noticed that all of the decent
nakedness
stories,
or people being like hurt or injured badly, seems to be the bigger thing.
Yeah, it just makes me think we've got a bunch of people who listen who are a bit like seeing sadistic naked lads, or just hurting people.
A little bit noncy at some points as well. Less of that though. But I believe, just as an example, you boys have an absolute corker of a story to tell. So if we could quickly fit that into the next 2 or 3 minutes, that would be astounding stuff.
Are you saying it, John? Or me?
It's only right, mate, if I crack on, because it's one of the finest stories I've ever seen. So let's set the scene. We're playing away at Muir Heath on an absolute baking hot day. I think it was about second or third week of the season, Lyle. Am I right?
Yeah, we weren't far.
Pretty early on. Playing Muir Heath. It's an absolute baker of a day. Back first, we smack 200 and something.
Didn't you get 100 or got quite a few?
I got 100, yeah.
Oh, that's why you want to get this.
Oh, well, I got five first. Oh, yeah. Well,
We both had very, as you can tell, we both had very good days. Yeah, I got 100. And then we bowled. Muir Heath kind of got off to a good start, didn't they?
Mm.
If I remember rightly. And then we got a couple of wickets. I think we got them like two or three down. And then Lyle came back on and literally just cleaned up pretty quickly. And then they were 100 and something all out quickly after that. But the story really revolves around after the game. So if any of the listeners have played at Muir Heath, Muir Heath's got like a shared shower area. So there's like three or four showers. We're all in there. Good set of lads, Muir Heath, by the way. So there's been no matter or anything like that. So there's a few of us in the shower at the time. There's me, there's Lyle, there's Aidy Myatt, one of the older stages in our first team. And there's also Tom Perkin as well. So Tom...
TP, what a man that bloke is.
Left-handed guy, the big one, Dave Gower. flashing left-handed middle order bat and occasional
could have done it all if he didn't like beer and birds.
Yeah, honestly. Could have made it all the way if he didn't get loved up with Danielle and didn't discover ale. But looking forward to having him back this year post-COVID. Now he's sorted his house out, that's going to be good fun. Anyway, so TP is notorious, if you don't know Tom, for forgetting things, not having kit. So he initially wasn't going to shower. So he's bought no towel. So he's got no towel. We're at Muir Heath. There's a set of like pegs and like a windowsill where everyone sticks the towel. And I think who did he speak to, Lyle? He said, oh, can I borrow your towel?
I think it was me, I think.
Yeah, I think it was you. Mm. He shouts over to Lyle, oh, can I borrow your towel after? So like, you use it first and all that. He said, I'll use your towel after. Anyway, as you can imagine, we've had a good day. We've smacked 200 and odd. We've rolled someone, 25 points, baking hot day. Everyone's already on the beers. Like, it's got the makings of a very, very, very promising night. And anyway, towards the end, there's just myself, Aidy Myatt, TP left in the shower with Muir Heath captain. And the Muir Heath captain, I think his name's Steve. I was captain that day. I think his name's Steve. Really nice guy. But the one thing I'll say about Steve is he's quite intimidating to look at, like shaven head.
I thought you were going to say he was longest in the shower then or something.
No. So shaven head. If you didn't know him, you wouldn't trifle with him for sure. But really, really nice guy. And TP's not one for kind of like mincing his words or anything. So we're there in the shower. Steve's keeping himself to himself. Me, Aid, and TP are talking. We all finish up. So it's basically just TP and Steve in the shower. Me and Aid are in the drying area, just sorting ourselves out before we go back in the changing room.
The ladies are loving listening to this, by the way.
Sorry.
And I actually know that a couple of ladies do listen to this, and it's both my mother and others, and God help them if they're trying to visualise this. My mother and others,
that's ominous, isn't it? My mother and others. Anyway.
Others who shouldn't be I
digress. Next thing I know, Lalo appears back in the shower. The three of us, three big line lads, are just drying themselves. Lalo appears back out the change room and says, Teeps, what have you done with my towel? He says, oh, it's here, isn't it? And he's like, no, I've got my towel here. Towel's in the changing room. So Lyle's got his own towel, the one that TP's meant to be borrowing. And I turn around in horror, my absolute horror, to see TP flossing with the towel. And for those of you out there who don't know what flossing is, TP is literally flossing the towel in between his legs. and giving it a right good rummage round. And behind TP was Muir Heath's captain, Steve. And it only turned out that TP was using Steve's towel. And at that moment, there's myself, Aidy, just staring, thinking that he's going to get filled in the shower. Because he's literally just staring at him, flossing, making eye contact, flossing in front of him. And no words were spoken. And all TP did was stop flossing, looks Steve from Muir Heath straight in the eye, and just chucks him his towel back and walks back to the changing room. Absolutely stalkers. And then when we were telling the story back in the... Oh, God, you can imagine. Absolutely incredible. So, yeah. So the pissed up mess from Big Malen, Tom Perkin, was flossing with the captain of Meerith's towel in front of him and then just handed his towel back like nothing had happened. In the shower, it was an absolute great day.
I did see him on Monday, actually. I think it was Monday. It was one day this week. Walking past stairs. So Swindles, they come drop something off for him, and he's literally, he's in these shorts, mate, and he looks like he's on his underwear. Goes, wait there, mate, I'll come for a walk with you. I says, all right. He's only had the day off work, and he's also had a large pizza and large chips for his dinner. He says, I'll only have to be quick, though, because Danny will be on the way home in a minute. So I need to get rid of the evidence before she gets back. We get on the walk back, we literally get round the corner. Danny's peeping and waving. She beat him home, didn't she? So I don't know how well that went down.
He's also like a couple of absolute belters. We've got two lads from Big Malen. There's probably more lads from Big Malen, actually. But two I can think of off the top of my head, Tom Owen and Tom Perkin. Both have run the Potters off a few times before. But if you've ever speak to TP about his running trainers, he's very, very particular about his running trainers. He wears this pair of Nike Free Runs that are from like 2010.
Nah, they are absolutely good though, comfy.
Falling apart. And these shoes look tiny. And he's not a small lad. These shoes are tiny. And we all said, TP, what size feet do you take? They're tiny. He actually wears shoes that are deliberately too small for him because he reckons they're comfier. I mean, I've never heard anything like
that. So they don't crease as well.
So they don't crease, yeah. He wears shoes that are too small for him, so his toes don't crease them when they bend.
I think that's where we leave talk about TP for now. I think at some point he probably has to come on here just to amuse us for an hour, to be fair, because
great
I love
value.
TP.
Great value.
He is, yeah. He is entertainment in a person, that lad. I love him. Right then, moving on to proper club cricket chat. Well, I say proper club cricket chat. What we're planning to do, seeing as we are all North Staffs League boys, players, whatever you want to call us, and let's be honest, we don't know much about club cricket outside of Stoke. Our plan is, throughout this summer and building up to summer, is to discuss the North Staffs League every week. Have a little chat about it, have a little bit of talk about maybe a couple of teams, a couple of players that have done really well. Now, one thing, obviously, to make this successful and worth doing, A, we need all the North Staffs players, clubs to hopefully listen to us, but we'd also love to get a few North Staffs players and members to come on the pod. Ideally, we'd have a different one every week throughout the season, on for a natter, and that'd be class. So this is sort of almost like a shout-out, a call to arms to the North Staffs bunch, whether you play for Mard, Leek, Audley, Hemeath, Meekins, whoever it may be. We want, obviously, your support, but then we want you guys to get involved, get yourselves on, send us info about what's happened at the weekend, any good stories, any 14-year-olds like absolutely slotting one past the pro's head or something daft, out like that. That is what we're after. So please, if you're involved in North Staff League, give us a share, get involved, because we'd like to chat about club cricket every week, and we'd like to chat about the local club cricket every week if possible. Moving on to that, talking about North Staffs, there's been a few little changes this year, so we're just going to have a quickly go through them. Win-lose has come in, so I play Div 7, I think from Div 4 down to the new Div 9. We're playing win-lose every week. You big boys up there, you get to play off-season win-lose, off-season win-draw-lose. We all happy with that?
Yeah, it's better than last year. No, not the last year, the full proper season the year before.
I was a bit sceptical, to be honest, but I quite enjoyed last year, so I'm pretty happy with that. I'm glad we've still got a mix, though. I'm glad they've not got rid of the draws completely.
Yeah. The only thing I would probably change,
I know
is
what's coming here, the overs for win, the for win-lose overs draw.
Win, lose, draw should be more than 45. Even if it's 50, I'd say, because, I don't know, it just seems a bit shorter, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can.
Harder to bowl sides out in 45 overs.
You're going to be going well to bat first and bowl someone out in 45 overs if they bat anything like they can.
Oh, we could get bowled out in 20.
Yeah, we could get, we could get bowled out in 20 balls, mate.
Proper teams.
But yeah, I think my league's going to be totally win-lose, but I quite like that, to be fair. Mainly because we have quite a... We play with a few young lads. We play against quite a few young lads as well. There's not many games, to be fair, that... I just think it improves the games, because the one thing I would say is that you often get to a point in the lower leagues whereby you do just have some one or two people literally not even playing a shot. They're just like, if it isn't on like on the stumps, they won't even play a shot 10 overs in just because they don't think they're going to chase down 200. And it's like, just, it is a bit boring, because I think you guys are probably a bit luckier that you've probably got people who are better bats who are willing to chase that score. But
we had some really good games last year, mate, for all different kinds of reasons. Low scores, high scores, chases, because obviously the pressure's on to chase every week. So I think, like I say, I was really sceptical. Before last year, I'd have voted to keep the format that we had every day of the week. But last year kind of opened my eyes, so I'm pleased it did, really.
Good, good. Moving on, obviously just mentioned there's now a Div 9, so Div 8 and Div 9, I think with a few clubs being added, it's sort of split in two, so teams will play each other four times. I think that's good, to be fair. It's mainly juniors with a few adults at that level, so I think that'll suit them. T20's changed a bit, so only the top two divisions go into the main T20. Thank Everyone God. Else goes into... Well, I'm probably going to disagree with you a bit here. Everyone else goes into the next one. Now, I don't disagree that the top two should have their own T20, because they're probably quite a bit stronger with the quality of overseas they get and the amount of money they're probably spending. But I would then say that it's daft. Like, we haven't entered a second team, to be fair, this year, in it, because we realised that we could be playing you boys in Div 2. And bearing in mind, if we've got two teams out on a Sunday, the chances are our seconds aren't going to be as strong as they normally would be anyway. We'd get tonked normally, so we'd get even. We'd just get embarrassed, to be fair, which I'd have still played because I just want to get in cricket, but I can understand why a few of the lads, I can understand why a few of the lads weren't really interested, because they didn't want to turn up with half a team and play top of Div 2 and get absolutely smashed around the place. I think they should have probably split it into, like, say, three, because you've got you've got 10 divisions now. 9 divisions plus the Prem. I think they could have split it a bit more, to be fair, and had a third competition.
Yeah, because some Div 4 sides are half decent size, actually, because we play Sandbach, Johnna. Who were meant to be in Div 4, but...
Well, they got promoted from Div 4 to Div 3, didn't they? And then did a double, didn't they? Or something like that. I can't remember.
Div 4 to Div 2, and they finished third last year or something like that.
Yes, good. Very good, mate. Young lads as well. Good. Yeah, really, really nice mix.
The top two on their own, maybe go 2, 3 and 4, and then have the next three after that.
Yeah. I'd go with that. But I think it's better that they have split it anyway, just because, as you say, I think it works better. Last thing, quickly, is overseas are technically allowed, but having just found out in the last week or so that overseas are going to have to pay £1,700 to sit in an hotel room for 2 weeks, on top of what they're already paying, do we see overseas happening? I think a lot of people will be quickly cancelling their overseas. I don't necessarily... I think there'll still be pros about. I think you boys have done it smart and got someone in, aren't you, who's English-based, which I think's the way to go, or should have been the way to go if you were planning for the season, to be fair, Travel Pro. But, yeah, do you see overseas pros coming? Are clubs going to be happy to pay the £1,700? Are pros going to be happy to pay a bit of it, because otherwise they don't get paid, I guess?
The only ways I can see it happening are if agents and pros take a slice of that, or offer to pay it, because obviously you say, well, if they think they can make enough anyway by being over here and collecting the money and being willing to put up a bit themselves, or maybe the agents, because obviously the agent fees, there'll be agent fees involved for most of them, won't there? Unless they've been dealt with directly. Unless there's something like that, I can't see many. That is, unless you have a club who is well-funded, is being sponsored to have the pro, whatever it might be. I know some of the bigger clubs might well go down that route. Especially, the only thing that I can think of as well, in addition to that, is if you've got a pro, quite often, a few of them, miss the first couple of weeks and the last couple of weeks for first class commitment anyway, don't they?
Yeah.
So I think if they were due to arrive or go home early or late, miss a few games anyway, and then they've got a quarantine as well, that's the bit that I think will finish a few of them off for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only going to be the big teams, isn't it, you'd think?
That... Yeah, I would say so.
So, I don't really see anyone from Div 2 or something down
the ladder. No, but like the one thing that I certainly like, dealing with it for Bignall End and stuff, you get speaking to a lot of agents and people who work on behalf of these lads, and a lot of nothing against them, but absolutely not, because most of them are good guys, really work to help you out, work for the benefit of their lads and work for the benefit of the clubs, but a lot of them are still announcing signings, which I'm really still surprised at.
Yeah.
That's something I don't really get. Like, I've seen a lot of them in the last couple of days on social media ever since that announcement. Still kind of like saying, oh yeah, such and such a body signed with such and such. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Because I can't quite like buy into it that it actually happened. That's all. But you never know. We'll see.
Never know. Right, we'll leave the club cricket chat there. I would say, North staff's players, clubs, please get involved. Give us a shout. Last thing, as always, is Room 101. Now, you boys have picked one each previously. Last week, Andy Mountford picked one. He wanted to get rid of that horrendous trash music. Forget Dave and AJ Tracy and all them. Palaver shite. And he won comfortably. Over 70% voted to get it in the bin. Oasis, Stone Roses, the old classics, like a bit of Spandau Ballet, like Jono said last week, they stay. That's what's on your in your changing room. And I can't be more delighted with that result, to be honest with you, boys. Because anyone who knows me knows it's indie or classic anthems, sing-along anthems, or nout with me.
Oh, I have been in your car plenty of times, too.
You know. That's only because I'm your personal taxi half the time. I'm so glad you've got Gina now to take half of it off me. But I'm going to pick the Room 101 this week, and I'm going to go with one that I'm sure will be agreed with, but there might be a miserable sod or two who disagrees with me. Not being allowed to, basically, in the moment, if an under 16 comes along, especially a spinner, which I find bizarre, and bowls a couple of no balls in a row, or a couple of no balls, they're dragged off if it's no ball above waist height. I think that is absolute tosh. You're telling like a 14, 15-year-old spinner that because he's bowled above waist height twice in a spell, he's got to come off. Are you taking the Michael?
We actually had an argument about this last year.
I know, you remember
last year we mentioned it, didn't we?
Yeah.
We had to get the umpires to go off the pitch because we were worried about Sammy, our young leg spinner, who's a junior. We were worried that he was going to get hauled off for bowling two no balls straight after a sanitation break with a wet ball. And the lad was down on one knee and he was bowling leg spin. So as we said, if you think that's dangerous, then fair dues.
Yeah,
but,
I don't. Fortunately, I would say most umpires are smart enough to turn around and say, look, it's not dangerous. He's not doing it deliberately. It wouldn't happen. But I know there's also other umpires there who will say the rules are rules. He's bowled two no balls. He's off. And I've seen it happen as well to another team against us. And we were like, we're on our arse, like, we're happy for him to stay on because, let's be honest, spinners bowling one at you at about chest height, he should only be going one place and one place only, and that's...
Straight up.
Well, yeah. In my case, when I was on 44 the other year, straight down deep square legs throat, apparently.
Get John Besser wicket, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
When did they change from shoulder height? Because that
it was a couple of years ago on it, which... I don't, bizarre. I can understand below shoulder height maybe for a fast bowler, but for a spinner, utterly bizarre, mate. So we'll put the poll out there. Do you agree that under 18 should be hauled off for bowling to waist height or above no balls, or do you think they should be given extra room to manoeuvre, shall we say? I think it should just be a case of if it's a junior and you don't think they're doing it deliberate, just let them carry on. So I think, boys, that's where we're going to leave it, unless someone else has anything. Either you boys have anything to add quickly, or not quickly.
No.
Good, that's always good to hear then. Right then, well, to all the lovely people who are listening to us, and we do seem to have quite a lot of listeners, even to Jono's dismay, a couple of Aussie listeners we've had in the last week.
can't believe it.
I know, madness. We actually made it into the top 50 of the podcast charts in Australia for cricket. I couldn't quite believe it. Yeah, we've made the top 20 a few days in the last few weeks for in the UK for cricket podcasts. But to actually make it into the top 50 in Australia, when all we do for half of the podcast is slag them off, was wow. Well, I don't know what to say. Obviously, a few of them
are sadistic. Anyway.
Yeah, we're not getting a visa, that's for certain. So, to all lovely listeners who've bothered to stick with us for now the fourth week, thanks for listening. Please go and follow us on social media. Please go and subscribe and review the pod if you can. And make sure you enter the giveaway for the 3 Woodstock bags. We've had some good entries, but I reckon they could still be beaten by some other stories. If you've got one about a ginger player of yours wiping his balls with the other team's towel, go for it. We'd love to hear it. Big thanks to Woodstock for obviously supporting us. And next week we have got an absolute cracker coming out. It will be probably a bit late coming out because we're talking to someone in Australia. We're talking to Benny Howell, who has played for the Melbourne Renegades recently in the Big Bash, plays for Gloucestershire. Bit of a T20 phenomenon, I think we'd say. And he's also sponsored by Woodstock. And so we've also decided to get on John O'Gordon from Woodstock, who is absolutely thrilled at the thought of being able to come on here and absolutely roast Aussies and then roast everything he hates about cricket in Room 101. I'm a bit concerned we might have 20 polls going out next week because he seems to hate 90% of cricket. I'm sure we'll have a good laugh with Benny and Jono next week. So please tune into that because I'm sure it'll be good. But once again, thanks for listening and have a good week, guys. Let's hope England get another win. Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.